All right. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Ray Heinisch, and I'm joined here in the virtual studio with none other than Blythe Allberg. Hey, Blythe.
Hi, guys. How's everybody doing today? I hope everybody's having a great fat-cutting day.
I'm sure they are. They're a little bit angry with us for taking such a long hiatus.
Oh, but, guys, you have to understand it's summertime, and we do need a little teeny bit of time off. So
No excuses, Blythe. No excuses.
Oh, you know what?
We are going to put out regular bi-weekly podcast. That is our ultimate goal. We have to keep these things coming for people because a lot of our listeners report that they rely on these podcasts for their kind of bi-weekly motivation, so to speak. It's what keeps them on track, and we need to keep people on track.
You know what? You're right. No excuses.
Okay, so here's my idea for today's podcast, okay? My brother posted on Facebook. He was walking through the mall, and he noticed that a couple of kids in the mall had Philly flat tops. And so he posted that the 80s are making a comeback.
Okay.
All right. So, like, I don't know, some of our European listeners or Australian listeners, our Canadian listeners, I don't know how things go. I'm not a terribly cultured fella in the sense that I've never traveled outside the U.S. So I don't know what it was like in the 80s in those countries. But here, flat tops were like the rage. It was like that flat top haircut.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking
about? I remember.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you remember.
You know what's funny is I saw somebody with one of those just 2 or 3 days ago.
Oh, did you? You know what? Uh-huh. Lauren posted that you just saw it in the mall. A couple of different kids had flat tops.
And the person I saw was a child, probably like a 12-year-old.
Oh, my goodness. Who knew? So I posted on Facebook, at least on my personal Facebook, a picture of myself with my brother, Lauren, back in the day, and we both had flat tops. So maybe I'll post that on on Cut the Fat Podcast so you guys can laugh. I had a flat top, big, enormous glasses. This was a picture taken at my sister's wedding. So anyway, long story short, it got me thinking. It got me thinking and reminiscing about the 80s. And by the way, the 80s was the ultimate – I mean, they don't make music anymore like they made back in the 80s.
Oh, no. You know, 80s was rocking.
Oh, you're telling me. And if some of our listeners are younger and don't remember the 80s, you guys got to culture yourselves there and take a step back to those days. But there was this term that we used to use. I don't know. I don't remember if this is quite – this is probably late 80s, maybe early 90s. And it was the term, like, when we would be walking down the street, we'd see a pretty girl. Guys would say, oh, well, that girl is fat, meaning P-H-A-T, spelled
okay.
P-H-A-T.
Yep.
And that stands for pretty,
pretty hot,
hot
and tempting.
Yeah. And so I – you know, long ago – and we may have talked about this in some of the early podcasts. I think we touched on this. But I have a different meaning for that acronym. Okay, so we have fat, F-A-T, and mm-hmm. fat, P-H-A-T, and I have a different definition or a different acronym for those two terms, okay? So
we're
going to talk about that in today's podcast. But before we do, I wanted to kind of set the stage by going through – there's a book called Flip the Switch, Lose the Weight. I just want to take a section out of this book and talk about – what the author Robert Cooper calls the MS off switches. And MS stands for metabolic stat. It's kind of his proprietary way of talking about the metabolism. So these are basically the off switches for metabolism. Okay. And it'll kind of segue into our discussion on fat, PHAT, and FAT, which we'll talk about here near the end of the podcast. Okay.
Okay. Fun. Yeah.
All right. So let me take each one of these. There are a total of 20. Okay, so we're going to have to go through these fast, Blythe. We can't really be our normal long-winded selves, okay?
Okay, and that is a cue for me to not be really wordy.
Hey, we both.
I get it.
We both. Trust me, we both get there. Okay, so here it goes. Number one is starting the day off on the wrong foot. And he talks about how, you know, a lack of physical movement, no exposure to bright light, skipping breakfast, and other unhealthy AM habits kind of set the stage for a poor metabolism. Talk about that for a second, because that's
a huge one. I think most of our listeners would agree that the easiest meal of the day to eat healthy would be breakfast, because you get up, you feel your best, you're rested, you're somewhat energized. Just our bodies are naturally like that upon waking. And if you start off the day with a healthy meal, your next meal is more apt to be healthier than if you start off with, say, a donut or something like that, because, you know, then you kind of feel like crap and you carry that throughout the day. And also, you know, the new blog post that you just put up on the Cut the Fat page.
Yes.
About exercising in the morning. I think that has a lot to do with it too. So if you're someone who is a morning exerciser, I think that also helps you make healthier choices throughout the day. So starting the day off right with a healthy meal and exercise would probably be optimal for most.
And it's more than just metabolism, isn't it? It really speaks to you kind of putting your foot down, drawing a line in the sand and saying, this is how my day is going to transpire.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
If we start the day with donuts, I guarantee you, 9 out of 10 times, the rest of the day is going to be shot. Not because of some sort of biochemical thing that's going on in your body, although that does play a role, but because your brain's going to say, well, you know, you messed up. You might as well just ruin the rest of the day and start again tomorrow. It's that start again tomorrow that kills our results, isn't it?
And I think everybody out there listening knows exactly what you're talking about. So it's fairly easy first thing in the morning to make a choice of eating a good, healthy, balanced breakfast, and that'll sort of propel you through the rest of the day.
Right. And I did do a post on that as well, as far as how to make a good, solid, fat loss friendly breakfast. And that post may surprise you. So definitely check out cutthefatpodcast.com and just search for breakfast and you'll find that post. Okay. Let's go on to the next one.
Okay.
The next one is giving in to inactivity inertia. And what he's talking about here, and this is a big component of the book in general. Again, the book is called Flip the Switch, Lose the Weight. And he's talking about flipping the switch, meaning if we regularly turn on our metabolism, then we can naturally burn more energy throughout the day. And it sets the stage for a much more healthier weight loss. So he talks about as far as inactivity inertia being basically about a 30-minute period. So if we go 30 minutes, about that 30-minute period is that cutoff point, all of a sudden our metabolic switch gets switched off. So if we get up and move every 30 minutes, then we switch that switch back on.
Okay, and that's simple to do. I mean, every 30 minutes you can get, you know, even if you've got a sedentary type job, get up and walk to the restroom. Can I just quickly share a teeny tiny story with you? It's very, very quick.
Go for it.
I work in an office now. So full-time, I have a job. It's kind of a long story, but anyway, I do have a job where I'm fairly sedentary. But you know me, that I'm absolutely reluctant to being absolutely sedentary. So I have an office job where I sit at a desk, and I make myself every hour. I'll get up, I'll go to the bathroom. I'll do 20 squats while I'm in the bathroom. I will do something to keep my activity level going. Now, I get up out of my chair and move around all the time, you know, running back and forth different places throughout the office. But I make an effort, because I'm going to have to get up and use the restroom anyway, to get up and do some form of exercise. It might sound crazy. It might sound silly. But hey, I'm sharing it with you guys.
Absolutely. Hey, hold that thought, because it's going to speak to the topic later down the line.
Okay.
Definitely hold that thought. Let's go on to number three.
Okay.
Weakening muscle fibers. Now, he talks about how he believes that exercising the muscles twice a week isn't enough. He wants you to really be using the muscles daily. Now, here's my take on that. I think that if you do an exercise session, like a full body, hardcore, eye of the tiger kind of exercise session, 3 days a week, meaning resistance training, that can be enough to spark significant muscle gains and help promote fat loss. But that being said, we should use our muscles every day.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let me give you the bodybuilder's perspective on that, because I know sometimes we like to dip into that a little bit. Weakening the muscle fiber. So, okay, people always ask me, well, should I train my legs twice a week? Should I do every body part 5 days a week? My philosophy as a bodybuilder's perspective would be work the muscle hard enough so you only have to those particular muscle groups if you want to work out, you know, say just your legs. I would say every Monday make it a point to work your legs to the point where you don't feel like you have to do it again until the next week. So number one, that's a time saver. And number two, it gets rid of the question of, well, how many times is right for me? You know what I mean?
Well, I say that one more time, because I think the recording went out for a second there, but say that one more time.
Okay. Which part? The very end? Do you want me to talk about
the, you, I think it went out at work the legs.
Okay, so work your legs so you only have to do it once a week, meaning weaken the muscle fibers enough so you don't feel like you have to train your legs again until the next week. If you enjoy doing muscle group body parts, you know how some people do like back and biceps every Tuesday or whatever. And I get that question all the time. And my philosophy is keep it short, keep it simple, and keep it time efficient.
Meaning intense.
You only have to work your legs once a week. You weaken that muscle fiber enough so you don't have to train your legs again until the following Monday.
Right. And most people who kind of dilly-dally in the gym, kind of walk around, you know, some people who are just there to, you know, find a mate or, you know, just go through the motions. Well, you know what? You can work out 5 days a week. You can work the same muscle group probably practically every day because you're not doing it enough damage to the muscle to really matter. But if you follow kind of the principles that we talk about here in the podcast, you should be able to work a muscle group hard enough, no more than 2 or 3 times a week. So if we're talking about a whole body workout, we're talking
about
2 to 3 sessions a week. If you're talking about a single muscle group, once a week.
Yep.
All right, awesome. So, but that being said, if you work out 3 days a week, you got to still use the muscles on a daily basis.
There you go.
It's you don't have to really destroy the muscle every time.
Just
do some push-ups here or there, some air squats without any weight, but keep those muscles involved in your daily activities.
Yep. That's awesome. That's a good one. I like that one.
All right, on to the next one. This is kind of an interesting one, living in the dark. Apparently, he talks about how when the days get shorter, it is an indication that winter is nearing. So some people who work in the dark or work in a dimly lighted room are sending a signal to the body that winter is close. So live in a bright area, especially during the day. One of the best things you can do for your sleep is get sunlight exposure first thing in the morning, because that sets the body's clock. During the day, try to work in a brightly lit environment. I remember a professor in pharmacy school by the name of Dr. Buderball. And Dr. Buderball had an office where you'd walk in there and it was always like these old kind of antique lamps that lit the room, and it had kind of this orange light glow. But he worked in there all day long. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is not a good plan. We want to be exposed to light during the day and dark during the night. We don't want to be exposed to dark during the day, because that sends the wrong message to the body.
Okay. So you try to sort of keep your body's natural algorithm.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
All right. Number five, this is metabolic off switch number five, is starving yourself of oxygen. Now, he speaks about, obviously, movement and oxygenating the system that way, but he also talks about posture. One thing I've noted when I've done metabolic testing, Blythe, I've had a couple of clients come in, do the metabolic testing where we sit them down, hook them to a machine, they breathe through this machine, and they are able to, and the machine tells us how many calories they burn on a daily basis.
Okay.
I've had some people come in and literally the amount of oxygen flow that was going through was not enough for the machine to register.
Huh.
And and they wonder why their metabolism is in the pits. It's not just about exercising the muscles. It's about keeping a posture that causes oxygen to flow through the system. You better believe that if you have very shallow breathing, that your cells are also starving of oxygen.
Yes. Do you remember, Ray, and this is just like, you just like flipped a little switch in my head. I'm thinking it was about 10 years ago. I remember hearing of some diet where, maybe it wasn't a diet, but it was some form of exercise where it was purely just breathing. It was like a certain way of breathing and you would lose weight. And it was like one of those fad type things. Now, I'm sure, and I've always thought there was some truth to that, that the more oxygen, the better your body just operates.
Mm-hmm.
But do you remember that? Or
yeah, you know, I know of that. It was a woman who would have you basically hold your breath in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And her claim was that if you held your breath in a certain way, it would build up the CO2 in the body. That would then cause the capillaries to open up, because the body is starved of oxygen. So the capillaries would open up. And then you would do this deep wide mouth breathing that would cause oxygen to flood into the system. And because of that, she said that would stoke the metabolism. That would cause the metabolism to function at a higher level. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but you can be sure there's truth to the fact that if you don't have oxygen in your system or you don't have enough oxygen in your system, then your metabolism is not functioning in all cylinders.
Okay, so what can people do? Say you're sitting at a sedentary office desk, and that's what you do, you know, 5 days a week. You can sit there and take a few deep breaths. I mean, these are things where make sure your posture is right while you're sitting in your chair. These are things you can do while you're, quote unquote, you know, doing other things.
Right.
But you can focus on keeping your posture nice, breathing deeply, getting oxygen in your system. All of these little teeny tiny tricks lead to the big lump sum of healthy living and losing fat.
We always get caught up in the big things. How many cars am I consuming? How much, sugars am I eating? But these little things, you know, like am I crouched over? Are my shoulders forward? Is my head forward? That kind of causes the diaphragm to be basically crammed up and unable to do its job. Stand as though or sit as though there's a balloon tied to your head and pulling your head to the ceiling. That posture opens up the lungs. It also allows the diaphragm room to work, and you'll instantly start to breathe better. Also, if you notice a baby breathing, every time they're breathing from their stomach goes up and down. We live in this society where we want to hold our stomachs in. We don't want people to think we have belly fat or that we have a big belly. So we tighten our stomachs all the time. And because of that, we don't get full breathing. So don't be afraid to breathe from the stomach. You know, that is diaphragmatic breathing. That's what's going to get more oxygen into your system. And plus, you're just going to feel better. Somebody who's depressed, how do they?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Are you doing it right now? Are you sitting up straight and stomach
standing,
breathing?
Actually.
I am.
I'm standing on my on my treadmill. But how does a depressed person look, Blythe?
Hunched over. Shoulders rounded
head forward. Down.
Yep.
How does an empowered kind of person, somebody who's energetic and happy, look? Their shoulders are back. Their head is up. And you feel better. Your physiology determines your mentality. So it at least plays a significant role. So definitely make sure that you're doing that. Okay? Onward?
Yeah, great one. Yes, onward.
This is your favorite one, Blythe. It's become dehydrated.
Yes.
That
I forever am preaching the water intake.
Become dehydrated is a metabolic off switch.
Yes. Stay hydrated, guys. There's nothing simpler than we're lucky because in today's society, water is no more accessible than you could ever imagine, other than, you know, putting your face under a tap or carrying a hose around with you and being able to drink. Water is very inexpensive if you buy bottled water. You can buy a whole 24-pack or whatever for $4, okay? So it doesn't cost a lot of money. There are probably sinks, faucets where you work, where you live. Most people have easy access to water. There is no excuse to become dehydrated.
Just drink more water, guys. Just drink more water. Period. Onward. We're only at number 6. Number 7, maxing out on caffeine. Okay, some caffeine, like a cup of black coffee in the morning, stokes metabolism. It actually improves caloric burn. But more than that, when you start to consume, you know, that triple shot latte, that causes the opposite effect. It causes the body to resist an excess of caffeine, and it causes stress hormones to be produced. So a little bit of coffee is good. A lot of coffee, not so good when it comes to fat loss.
And, you know, one thing I want to say is that what is the reason we drink coffee? Because we're not getting enough sleep and we're tired the next day, or maybe lack of moving and we don't feel energetic. So coffee is almost like, now I'm a coffee drinker. Okay. I like to have one cup in the morning. I enjoy coffee. But I think that coffee is sort of a crutch because we're losing out somewhere else. So I think we could do without the caffeine for an energy source is what I'm trying to say. But like you said, you know, a little caffeine is fine. It's okay. But try not to rely on coffee as an energy source. There's probably something else wrong is what I'm saying.
Absolutely. And like I say, you know, just don't drink too much of it. You know, I get my cup of coffee in the morning, and that's pretty much it for the day.
Yeah.
So just pay attention to that. Okay. Number eight. This is a new word for me, Blythe.
Okay.
Over-imbibing.
Imbibing.
Yes, imbibing. Okay. Over-imbibing is drinking too much alcohol. Let me just put this in a nutshell. A lot of people think that alcohol is a problem because it's a carb source. That's partially true. But the big issue is that alcohol short circuits your ability to use carbs and fat for energy. So your body will convert alcohol into acetate. And the body will then prefer to use that over carbs and fat. So basically, it's inhibiting your body's ability to use carbs and fat for energy. So just don't drink too much alcohol. What research has shown is that if you drink two alcoholic drinks per day, this is a study that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, two alcoholic drinks per day reduces your ability to burn fat by about one third.
Wow, so 33%. Okay.
Okay. So just don't.
Good to know.
Okay. Number nine, slumping your way to fat gain. And we already talked about this. That's the ability to stand erect on two feet, he says, is uniquely human. Don't let your standing posture drop. When you do, that changes your system in such a way that promotes fat gain.
You know what, guys? And remember that while you're exercising, proper form and sitting erect, you know, say you're using the row machine. It's really important not to slump forward. It's really important with every exercise you do to keep proper posture.
Right. Metabolic switch number 10, raising body temperature. This is an interesting one, Blythe. He talks about that, when we shiver, even slightly, we burn more energy than when we're not cold. But
yes.
If we bundle up and hide under layers and layers of clothing, then we're robbing ourselves of the opportunity to burn that type of energy as heat, to stoke metabolism in that way. So don't go overboard with the clothing. If you're cold, you know, your body can then use that to form and burn energy as heat.
You know, you just made me think of something. When you're in, say you walk into a sauna and you feel kind of hot and sleepy and lazy, that's exactly what's happening, is you're not using that extra energy to be a heat source because your body doesn't need to do that anymore. You sort of feel hot and lazy.
Mm-hmm. For people.
Okay. Interesting.
Right. Number 11, living with hormonal imbalances.
Mm.
Thyroid.
Yes.
Estrogen, progesterone. All these
stress
things,
and cortisol.
Stress and cortisol. So definitely being good about being good to your hormonal systems, especially your adrenal glands, because when you're stressed, you can't lose weight. It's nearly impossible. So you've got to be good about taking care of your adrenal glands and all glands in general.
I think it's why we always preach optimal health and the weight loss will come.
That's correct. Yep. And when we say optimal health, we're not just talking diet and exercise. We're talking about stress and sleep as well. And your social networks and everything that touches your life has an impact on your fat loss efforts, even if you don't really make the connection. So your friends connect to your fat loss. If you've got friends that cause you to go out and drink and eat a lot, then that plays a role, doesn't it? If you've got a husband, and I think you touched on this on somebody's Facebook post, but if you've got a husband who brings home Kentucky Fried Chicken, every other night, even though that he knows you're on a weight loss program or you're trying to burn the fat, it's a problem. It plays a role, right?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Yep. We can address that one later, though. If you guys haven't gone on the Facebook page and read that was an awesome. I guess it was a statement that she put, or a question. She asked about that. I think that's an awesome one. So if you guys haven't gone on our Facebook page, make sure you check it out.
Right. This next one I'll just briefly mention, and then we'll go on to the next one. That's tensing up. It says, unlike deliberate flexing where you like go into the gym and you lift a weight, chronic tension in your body causes a shift that is unhealthy for your metabolism. So,
and this again is something you can do while you're at work or not doing anything. Consciously make the effort to not be tense.
Don't be tense, but don't slouch either. So
okay,
you gotta
right.
have that happy medium.
Keep your shoulders out of your ears. Yes. How's that?
Not very good. Number 13, giving in to stress. Again, we're back to the stress thing, aren't we? He talks about how in this section, he talks about how stress causes the release of cortisol, and cortisol causes the release of the most important fat-storing enzyme in the body, lipoprotein lipase.
Yes.
So we've just got to be good about managing our stress, because I have literally, Blythe, I've literally had people who their diet and their exercise programs seem almost perfect, but they're under chronic stress and they can't lose the weight.
Yeah. And I think that's more common than people realize. Stress often helps. I mean, exercise often helps with the stress. So if you're somebody who feels stressed out all the time and you don't have enough time to exercise, even walking, you know, our 30-day challenge may be something that helps you.
30-day challenge release some being of that stress. Walk 30 minutes a day for 30 straight days without any breaks in between, weekends and holidays included.
30 days straight.
Yep. If you go back to some of the old podcasts, I think in the first podcast we talk about that.
I think it was number one.
The 30-30 plan, which is 30 minutes a day, 30 straight days, including weekends and holidays, because it's the building of the habit that's important.
Yes.
14, skipping meals. And skipping meals or snacks. You know, there's this thing called the thermic effect of food, and I think some fat loss practitioners or some fat loss quote-unquote experts make a big deal out of the thermic effect of food. I don't think it's a huge factor in people's weight loss, but there are other things that come into play that are important. The thermic effect of food talks about how when you eat, just the fact that you're going to digest and absorb that food burns calories. And because of that, the more often you eat, the more calories you burn. The likelihood is that probably plays a fairly insignificant role in weight loss. It's more about keeping other hormones in the body in balance. When you eat five or six smaller meals throughout the day, you have a tendency to keep the hormones in better balance as long as all of those meals don't have carbohydrates. If we snack, just make sure your snacks are protein or non-starchy vegetables. And that way we get all of the metabolic boost that we want without negatively inhibiting or producing excess levels of insulin.
Okay, that's a simple way to keep it carb-free or veggies and proteins for your snacks. Easy.
Number 15, falling into the sugar blahs. He says he calls this a killer. This is a killer of a fat maker. He says to handle even a single teaspoon of sugar or another refined carbohydrate, your body has to wrap up its fat making and fat storing functions. Think about it this way. In the entire blood volume of a healthy person, somebody who is not diabetic, if you have a blood sugar of 85 milligrams per deciliter, in the entire blood volume, there is one teaspoon of sugar dissolved.
Okay.
So if you take another teaspoon of sugar, that doubles the amount of sugar that's in your blood, and your body has to process and handle that. So one teaspoon of sugar will ramp up fat-storing enzymes.
One teaspoon. And that seems – that's like what you might put in your coffee, you know, if you add sugar. Yeah.
And that's not something to say that you can't get away with a teaspoon. It's just saying that, you know, when we talk about how the average mega-sized soda, like the big gulp at 7-Eleven, has 25 teaspoons of sugar in it.
Yes.
You know, that's where we start to get into the big problems, right?
Yeah, and you know what? For some people, that may have just flipped a switch, because sometimes just knowing what it does to your body will help you change your mind or reason with yourself the next time you go to make a choice like that.
Absolutely.
To eat something like that.
Awesome.
Okay, that's a good one.
All right, number 16, getting stuck on the fat train. Now, by fat train, he's talking about how some people have a tendency to kind of fall over the edge as it pertains to fat intake. They consume too much fat. And because of that, the fat storing happens too easily. You know, a lot of the fats that we consume in our diet do get stored as fat fairly easily, especially under the stimulus of too many carbohydrates. You know, when you look at the paleo movement, like Mark Sisson's work, Rob Wolf's work, they have a tendency to be okay with higher quantities of fat in the diet. But you've got to take into account that the diet that they're referring to is very low in carbohydrates. The formula for fat gain for a horrible metabolism is high carb, high fat.
Plus high fat, right? Yeah.
If we remove the carbs, the high fat is less of a problem. but it's still possible to overshoot your mark as it pertains to that. So if you start eating a huge bag of almonds or handfuls of peanuts or a few tablespoons of peanut butter per day, it adds up and it may overshoot your mark, right?
Yeah. And, one of the interesting things, though, I think, and it's not an exception, but you said, if you're doing the paleo type diet, well, you can get away with a little higher fats. But keep in mind that those aren't just any kind of fats. Those are all naturally occurring fats. And now I think our listeners get that, but it's really easy to, if you're tracking, you're logging your food, it's really easy to go, oh, well, geez, I only got 35 grams of fat today. But you look back at the type of fats you had and they came from processed foods. So there's a big difference between the processed foods type of fats and the naturally occurring fats.
Yes, thank you for that. That's a great point. I think it's a critical point, in fact, because you're right. They're not getting trans fats. They're not getting large quantities of saturated fats from animal foods.
That's right.
Their saturated fats are typically coming from coconut oil, or they're coming from free-range animals, which balance those saturated fats with other healthy polyunsaturated fats and monounsaturated fats. So they're not getting rancid, old, damaged oils. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
Okay. 17, starving for protein. Touch on this for me.
Well, I think the number one thing that people lack, I'm going to say Americans, but it might be worldwide. The number one thing that people are lacking most is protein in their diet, and especially women. And I'm not exactly sure why it is so much more women that I see. And now I'm only speaking from my experience with clients, and then I ask them to start logging their food, and it's something totally new to them. I'll see women getting maybe 15% of their diet is protein, and the rest is carbs and fats. It's really easy nowadays to get your carbohydrates in. Everything you see in a box, in a package, is almost predominantly carbohydrates.
You're right.
So, I've heard this before, that if you travel the outside of the grocery store, usually you'll find the produce, the meats, the fresh vegetables and things like that. So it's important to travel the outside of the store. And I find this with most grocery stores, that is the way it goes. You'll find the whole grains and things like that. Anyway, it's important to do that. Focus on getting your proteins and your healthy things in first, and then go to the carbohydrates. But all these people that are unprepared, and you go out to get a quick bite to eat during lunch, or you grab a snack on the go. If you're not prepared, it's extremely difficult to get your protein in. And I think that's where we all fall into that little trap of not getting in enough protein. And protein is what repairs the muscle. The amino acids are what repairs the muscle that you have broken down during exercise. So it's important to get that protein in to maintain your muscle mass, to keep your metabolism active, and to repair all of the cells that you have broken down, or all the muscle fibers you have broken down with your exercise. Protein is imperative. Carbohydrates are not. Now, it's important to get the fiber in. That's how I feel about it. Now, you may have something else to say. Carbohydrates are important for energy, but I don't think they're imperative in diet.
Right, and if we're talking about the thermic effect of food, of all the foods, hands down, protein is the most – your body burns more energy digesting and absorbing protein than any other food. In fact, 40% more energy is lost in the digestion and absorption of protein than it is carbs. So that, too, plays a role with metabolism as well. Mm-hmm. Great points. Okay, so 18, accidentally overeating. He talks about how – we're programmed to overeat. And if we're not on any kind of lifestyle program, if we don't live by any kind of rules or philosophy, then we will naturally accidentally overeat practically every time.
Okay. So you're not thinking about overeating. You're just eating without a plan. And every time you're getting more than you should, more calories, more fat, more carbs. Okay. Okay. So the unpreparedness.
Yeah, it goes back to the unpreparedness you just talked about with as it pertains to protein. There's no one – a thing like that, either be prepared for fat – for living a fat loss lifestyle, or be prepared to gain weight. That's just the way it is.
That's the simplicity of it, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Simplicity is my specialty sometimes.
Uh-huh. Okay, love it.
19, collapsing when evening comes. He talks about how 4 out of every 5 Americans basically get no physical activity mm-hmm. in the evening. They plop on a couch and watch TV all night. And as he talked about previously, if you're down for 30 minutes, after 30 minutes, that seems to be the cutoff where lipoprotein lipase enzyme activity levels, which is the fat storing enzyme, kick up. Unless we get up and do some sort of movement about every 30 minutes. So let's leave it there because we're going to talk about this a little bit more in detail after we're done with the 20th point.
Okay.
Okay, and the 20th point is not getting enough sleep.
Ah, yes. I knew that had to be in there somewhere.
Yep.
Okay. And so not getting enough sleep.
It never ceases to amaze me how people ignore the impact of sleep on fat loss. Again, just like I've known people who everything else is great, their diet's great, their lifestyle's great, their activity levels are great, but the only thing they're not doing is getting enough sleep, and because of it, they can't lose weight. In fact, they're gaining weight. So you got to be careful with that.
Okay.
Okay. So I talked about FAT versus PHAT, right?
Yes. Going
back to our 80s example. So PHAT in my book stands for potentially high activity time. So potential high activity time is what that stands for.
Okay.
FAT stands for failed activity time. So what I want people to do is I want people to look through the goggles of a fitness lifestyle person, somebody who's naturally fit. If we were to look through their eyes, basically they see opportunity for activity and exercise everywhere. People who have a tendency to struggle with weight see it almost nowhere. So when we take a compartment of our life and we view it as that is a PHAT, a potential high activity time, then we can start to utilize that time a little bit better so that it helps us or serves us in our weight loss efforts. If we ignore that potential high activity time, it then becomes failed activity time. You can't get that time back, can you?
No. That's, you put a picture up on Facebook the other day. Which one was it? I can't remember. But I love when you or I find some sort of like a motivating picture with a caption on it because it always seems to like trigger something for a few people, what they're feeling or what they're thinking. And what you just said there is like one of those. If we had a picture to go with it, we're going to just have to paint a picture because we're podcasting. But that's a great point.
So let's put this into something that people can use right away. Okay.
Okay.
So I have a list here of some of the things that are some of the potential high activity times that will become failed activity time if we don't kind of get it, if we don't realize in the moment that it is an opportunity to be active. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the most obvious, okay? TV time.
Okay.
Now, I, like anybody else, love to watch a few TV shows. A good example is Game of Thrones on HBO.
Okay.
Great show. And so I want to watch that show. But what ends up happening is we have a tendency to string things together. And the networks do this. Like they'll put a great show on and then another great show and another great show. So that you basically end up with this string of failed activity time because you're laying on a couch doing nothing. The fitness-minded person will see that potential high activity time and get up and move. Like a fitness-minded person might hop on a treadmill and watch The Biggest Loser while they're walking the treadmill.
Great idea. Okay.
You know, somebody who's not, somebody who ends up with FAT or fat time basically will lay on the couch and watch The Biggest Loser on the couch. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually not empty-handed, right? They'll have a bag of chips there chomping because there's a commercial for food. Practically every other commercial is a commercial for food.
Yes.
So TV is – most people view that as just lost time. You're just going to sit and watch TV. But that is a potential high activity time, right?
Yeah.
Another one, lunch breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Most people think, if we just kind of let ourselves fall into the default programming, well, you got to sit and eat lunch. Mm-hmm. I remember in one of my weight loss classes, in my group classes, their one of the participants took it to heart, took the fact that she had to get her 30-30 in. That was like one of the rules that she had to do. And, you know, she had a child. And so when she would get home, she'd be tired and, you know, the child would take up her time and she would want to spend time with her child. So she started to walk at her lunch break. And all of a sudden, everybody in the office wanted to walk with her. And she was even a little bit annoyed by it because it was kind of her time to, you know, to be with her thoughts and to get her walking in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have an, if you have an hour break, why not spend 30 minutes of it eating and 30 minutes of it walking?
There you go. You do not have to sit down and eat your lunch. And this is something I can speak personally from. I am one of those people that has, you know, I sit all day at my job now, and then I go to my lunch break and I sit down. But you know what? I've got a couple of other girls that work with me, and we've decided that we don't have to sit. And this is funny because this happened like last week. So I'm sort of, I guess, being the motivator. And I love, for me, I love that, you know, also being a trainer and things like that. I love motivating other people and getting them active. But it's so true, you know, and you feel better after. You'll actually find yourself looking forward to your lunchtime lunch break because it's a little bit of me time, like you said. And, you know, you actually, you'll digest your food better. Mm-hmm. You'll probably drink more water. I mean, it just brings everything like into play. I love it.
Yeah. And the point is again, it's how you view these opportunities. Most mm-hmm. people don't see the opportunity for potential high activity time in a lunch break.
Right.
You, as a fat cutter, need to. All right. So number three, listening to podcasts. Mm-hmm. It would be an insult for us if you guys would listen to this podcast while laying on a couch somewhere.
Oh, I hope not. I always picture people listening to us and being like smiles on their faces and just like beaming with energy. That's what I think
of. Walking a track or walking out in nature,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So definitely don't spend time listening to podcasts on a couch. Get up, move, walk. It's
That's
an opportunity.
Right. Tisk, tisk. Yes.
Next one, reading. Again, so this is a really good example of how somebody might see reading as not a potential high activity time, but it can be. Why? Well, because you can go to audible.com or some other service and buy that same book that you've been trying to read for the last month in an audio version and move. That's while you exactly. listen,
you know, you could do it on your lunch break.
Yeah,
you can walk, listen to your, yeah.
Or even if you just listen to the audiobook on your drive to work, then you're not going home feeling guilty about not reading the book you've been trying to get to.
There you go.
You can use that time to go out and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it, again, it's just a way of viewing life. It's a way of viewing life, this this PHAT versus FAT. And reading is a great example of that. I read two books a week probably. And
that's awesome.
I'm not sitting down and reading the book. I'm listening to the book, but I still consider it reading the book, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You're gaining the knowledge that you would get, you know, if your eyes were reading it or if you're listening to it. And there's so many things you can do. I know, I don't know if all of you know this. If you haven't started at podcast number one and gone from there, you might not know that Ray has a treadmill desk.
Yes, I'm standing on it right now.
Yeah, he walks on the treadmill, probably not while we're podcasting because it would be too noisy. The microphone would pick up the noise. But every time I have ever walked past Dr. Ray's office, he is walking on his treadmill and working on his computer and probably listening to a book at the same time.
Yeah, sometimes. Hey, let's see if you can hear me. I'm going to go ahead and turn it on here.
And it's literally a desk.
That's where I do
around a treadmill, built onto a treadmill, guys. They are out there. Google it.
Can you hear it?
I can hear your feet stepping.
Okay.
I can hear your feet stepping, but it...
Yeah. But yeah, it's a great point. And that brings me to the next one, which is work. You know, we go to work, and we don't view that as potential high activity time, but mm-hmm. it is. You know, I mean, I realize that not everybody can get their boss to allow them to have a Trek desk or a treadmill desk in their office. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Some of you, it probably is an option. If it is, you should make it happen because it's fantastic. You oxygenate the body. You feel more energetic. You get more work done. You would think that walking on a treadmill while typing or answering phone calls would be less efficient. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's more efficient. And when you start viewing through the PHAT glasses, you start to see you start to see these opportunities out there. That's kind of the big point.
And, you know, a smaller version of that, you're talking about if your boss could get you a treadmill desk. Well, if that's not something that's there, you know, available to you, you can work on your posture. You can work on your breathing. You can work on de-stressing. Mm-hmm. You can get up and go to the restroom every hour and make yourself do 20 air squats like I do.
Air squats or what I do. And this is
wall push-ups. You could do whatever.
You know, I do the cut the fat hand dryer. So instead of using the paper towels, you do jumping jacks after you wash your hands. So
love it.
Until your hands are dry.
Hey, I'm going to do that. That's a good one.
So jumping jacks until your hands are dry. It's the cut the fat hand dryer.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes all it takes is hearing somebody else's ideas for you to go, oh, I'm going to try that. And it's actually, I'm looking forward to it now.
It's only ridiculous if you're looking through the wrong glasses. Okay, so look at everything as a potential high activity time when you can. Family time, another good example. Yeah, you could. Yeah, you have to spend time with your family. If you have kids, you want to spend time with them. If you have a sibling, you want to spend time with them. Yeah, you can sit in a booth and eat food, or you can go for a walk around the mall with your siblings or your friends, or you can go play outside with your kids. Or you can, try to have a conversation with them while they're exercising their thumbs playing Xbox. So family time is a potential high activity time.
Can I just say something as a mom? Because this totally just made me think of this. Your kids would probably love doing jumping jacks as a hand dryer. My kids usually skip drying their hands, just wipe it on their. How about have your kids doing jumping jacks? It's a great habit to get young people into. Being, you know, set them up with the PHAT lifestyle rather than allowing them to fall into the complacent FAT lifestyle.
Absolutely.
Show kids fun things like that. Kids live for that kind of stuff. Nobody wants to live the FAT
lifestyle. That is,
but it's easy to fall into. So,
talking to friends. You know, yesterday I had a phone meeting with somebody, and I had just got done running outside, doing some intervals outside, and you know, I had my earbuds in, and the call came through, and so instead of sitting at a desk, I'm walking around a beautiful lake, talking to somebody on the phone. Why not? You don't have to talk to people, you know, sitting at
there.
A desk.
Right.
Get up, move around. It's why God made cell phones. Didn't make cell phones just to make your life more hectic. They're there so that you can talk and walk. So those are all the tips I have. Were there any that I missed that you think people could benefit from?
You know, nothing off the top of my head. I think you pretty much hit every point that would just pop into my head. I feel like I interjected a lot on the things that you said. One of the most important things to me now, being a mom, is setting your children up for not falling into the complacent lifestyle that is so easy for kids. It's so easy to go through a drive-thru and pick up your kids' dinner. It's so easy for you to put your kids in front of an Xbox at night, you know, because you want to lay down on the couch and watch TV. While you're doing it for yourself, if you have kids, do it for your kids too. Do it for your sister. Do it for your brother. Do it for your girlfriend or boyfriend. You know, help. You can help other people, and I think that comes back as a reward, and it becomes motivating for you as well.
Absolutely. Great final notes there, Blythe. You want to tell everybody how to get us, and then you can sing us out to some sort of 80s song?
Oh, my gosh. I have got to think of a song.
While you're doing that, if you want to get a hold of us, go to Facebook, search for Cut the Fat Podcast, all one word. Be sure to like the page. We like to post stuff on there, motivational things. Whenever I do a new blog post, I post it up there. Also, you can ask questions, and you know, we're happy to answer.
There are a lot of good ones out there.
People in the community have a tendency to answer as well. We're trying to build a good community of fat cutters that you can use as a resource to build your social network, your fat loss friendly social network. And that's what Cut the Fat's all about. Also, check out cutthefatpodcast.com, and that's where you'll find our blog posts and such. And go to iTunes and rate our podcast on there. It'd be fantastic to have your rating on there. We read every single one of them, and all of them barring the very few one or two stars. Please don't give us one or two stars. Give us five stars. And but every one we read warms the cockles of our hearts, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. We love, and we share them, guys. You know, whenever we see stuff like that, we'll send each other a text message or an email and share it, because that is why we do this. We love, you know, setting a spark for you guys. And we would like to hope that you pay it forward. Tell your friends about us. Have them become part of the Cut the Fat tribe too.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Blake, go ahead and sing us out. To represent our discussion on PHAT.
You can't touch this. Can't touch this. I have to wear some parachute pants and like shuffle to the side. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the rest of the words.
All right, but we'll stop there, and we'll let the Grilled Lincoln sing us out for the remainder of the show. Guys, it's been a pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks
this
for
podcast.
Listening.
Yes, and we'll see you next time here on Cut the Fat Podcast. Say bye. Say bye, Blythe.
Bye, guys.
All right, bye.
Something new, a little twist of what you know is true. You're in a cloudy hole, shit don't touch you, and you feel a bliss of pop the pussy's blue. And all the sticky things that keep me silent are the same things that make your safe world violent. Brother and a home.